You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
While you were skipping stones, building forts, and flying kites, I was missing school and all my Saturday nights. Other kids were climbing trees and rolling down hills. I was singing songs to pay my family's bills. Little me, growing up Broadway. Little me.
Hello, I'm Mark Tuminelli, and welcome to episode 11 of the Little Me Podcast. I've been having so much fun doing this, so thank you guys for listening. And now you can follow us on Instagram at Little Me Podcast. I'm so excited to welcome someone I consider part of my family. We first met when she was 6 years old, and I had the privilege to watch her make her Broadway dream come true as young Fiona in the original Broadway cast of Shrek. Following Shrek, she appeared on Broadway in Billy Elliot, Mary Poppins, People in the Picture, and Larry David's Fish in the Dark. She'd appeared in countless films and on TV shows like Friends from College, Orange is the New Black, and 7 Seconds. She has also starred in my Broadway Workshop productions of Carrie and Pippin. And to top it all off, she just finished her freshman year at Harvard. Welcome, my good buddy, Rachel Reshef.
Hello.
Rachel, it sounds nice when you hear like all of that together.
I know. It sounds like, okay, that's like a little.
I didn't even mention any movies. I'm just focusing on the Broadway and the TV shows I've watched. So you've done more than people who are like in their 70s. So congratulations on being the most talented child ever.
Thank you.
So welcome to Little Me. Crazy year, your first year you had at Harvard, huh?
I know. It really, it feels like it was like a few months at Harvard and then a few months like in my room on Zoom. But it was great.
You get like, are you finished with the year? How does that like wrap up if you are not in school?
Yeah, no, it was the same kind of layout of the semester, and I had just a bunch of essays to do to finish off my year. So I had my classes on Zoom a few times a week, and then in May we finished, and then after that I've been experiencing like real quarantine. I didn't have school anymore.
Great. Yeah. And that so Harvard's like, it's not super easy to get into. Not everyone gets to go there. At what point had you like set your sights on like, this is where I'm sort of meant to be?
I feel like I always had that kind of thought in my brain that I would go to an academic school. I feel like people told me growing up so many things about what I should do with my life. Some people would be like, you should go to school for acting. Some people should be like, definitely don't go to school for acting. Some people would be like, don't go to college. But I always wanted to definitely go to college. And throughout, I guess, high school, I thought that I would go to school for musical theater. I was like, that's what you do if you want to be a musical theater actor as an adult. Like, you go to school for musical theater. And then I think when I did probably those shows junior year, senior year, when I did Pippin, when I did 42nd Street at LaGuardia and Little Night Music, it just felt like I was getting so much training at LaGuardia, and I kind of felt like maybe if I hadn't gone to LaGuardia, I would have gone to school for theater. But because I had that kind of formal acting training in addition to my years of on-the-job training, it kind of felt like, okay, I think I'm going to go for an academic school. And then that was really scary. And senior year was so stressful because it was like, I have no idea if this is going to happen. And it happened, but it was definitely stressful.
You said something so smart that I tell everybody. When we were seeing each other in December, and we went to see LaGuardia's production of Cinderella, which was beautiful, and they do incredible shows. People were flocking around you like I was with Julia Roberts, but partly because you were going to a school that so many students had their eyes on, and they wanted to know what your experience was. And I had asked you, I said, do you feel so special that you go to Harvard? And I don't know if you remember what you said, but you said, not at Harvard, because everyone goes to Harvard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you're there, it's like you're surrounded by so many smart, cool people. I mean, also, I think there is a kind of joke about Harvard that when you go there, you let people know that you go there and you talk about the fact that you go there. But so it's not like...
Like being a vegan.
Right. Like being a vegan. You just got to work it into every sentence. Also, the gap year, I got to work that into every sentence.
It's a gap year. I'm a vegan and I go to Harvard.
Yes. But yeah, I definitely... It feels relatively normal, and it's kind of, I guess it's weird looking on the outside that it's normal, but it's that's just like where I go to school. And I also kind of have this feeling of like, it doesn't really matter where you go to school. Like, it matters where you go to school, but it also matters what you do with that education, you know, and what you do with your time there and how you spend your time, how you take in what you're learning, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it feels
good. Do you love it? Are you learning a lot?
I'm learning so much. I mean, I think the classes are definitely my favorite part so far. And I think first semester, I was a little bit like, where am I? I don't understand where I am. I'm living on another planet. And then slowly it started to feel like, okay, you know, the people are great and I have a lot of great friends there. And I started to really enjoy living there and enjoying that kind of like, not a city, but not a city. And that.
And you're still coming back to audition, and you did a workshop of something we can't talk about, but you are continuing your career at the same time, which seems very difficult. How hard is that to balance?
I'd say it's hard to balance if you like want to go to a lot of parties, which I don't know if that's like my MO.
Not really your brand.
No, it's not my brand. So usually I didn't have classes on Friday both semesters. I kind of made my schedule that way. So if I wanted to come in, which I ended up coming in a lot, I would leave on like Thursday night and then be in the city for a Friday audition, or and then sometimes I would stay over the weekend if it felt like, oh my gosh, it's a schlep to get back right now. But yeah, it was tricky sometimes, but also I really love that I'm still having both worlds, because I feel like being back in the city, like doing the things I love, like that's part of what makes me. And so it's, even though I'm kind of in this new world, I also am still keeping a lot of the stuff that makes me who I am. So I think it was definitely helpful with the transition. And second semester when I did that workshop, I had the first kind of glance at what it's like to actually like miss a chunk of school. And it wasn't that bad. It was
right. Well, you've been doing it your whole life, which is, so we're going to rewind right now.
Yes.
There's almost no time in your timeline where you could just be at school. So you wouldn't understand what to do with that anyway. So talk to me, let's go back to the beginning. You're 6 years old. You're performing at Random Farms Kids Theater in Westchester with our buddy Anya Wallach, who kind of starts everybody's career in this business, including mine. You're doing these things, and then, so what happens that takes you from being like the kid who doesn't really know what's going on in Willy Wonka to let's pursue this in a much bigger way? How did that come about?
It wasn't really a game plan in any way. It wasn't like eyeing the stage and being like, I'm going to be on Broadway. Like, I never really had that moment. I had seen a couple Broadway shows for birthdays and stuff, but I loved it and I loved theater so much, but it just didn't feel like that. I didn't really think that that was a possibility. And it wasn't even like my dream, really. It was something that was so cool, but I wasn't like, when I grow up, I'm going to be on Broadway. I wasn't like that kid. I don't know. And then we did the Random Farms showcase where everyone was auditioning for it. And it just kind of felt like, oh, I'm just going to audition for this. I auditioned for everything at Random Farms. Mm-hmm. So it just felt like another thing to audition for. I didn't really even know what it was. And then I got a manager. And even still, I kind of didn't know what that meant. And so everything
Because you were six.
I was seven.
Seven
yes. Turning eight. Okay. But big difference. But yeah, so it kind of just like turned into this thing that who knew what was going to happen after
and
that.
And it was pretty quick. Like I'll never forget you singing Honey Bun in that showcase.
Yeah.
Which was the cutest thing anyone's ever seen.
With your choreography.
My little steps. Yes. It was like rubbing your.
It was like
rubbing your head.
On Hurley and Burley, I did like a little hip twirl.
Hip circle.
Yeah.
Well, it worked. So you got a manager, and then Shrek came along very quickly. It was like in the first 6 months of you having management, right?
Yeah, I really, it was, everything happened so quickly. So I, the first thing I did was a voiceover, which you can, I think, find on YouTube. It was Pinky Dinky Doo. I was Nick Stretch, if anyone cares. And then the second thing I did was a feature film that summer with Edie Falco and all these people. And I had this like long audition process for that film. And then that was a great experience. And it was my first thing, my first big professional thing. And I had a big part, and who knew that I was going to be doing so much theater. And then a couple, I don't know, months, maybe a month later, after I shot that film in September of 2008, I auditioned for Shrek, and then I had a callback, and then I got the part, and then I started being on Broadway.
And then we couldn't stop her. What do you remember most about that experience of Shrek, going from your only real experiences were doing random farm shows or doing your school, whatever, to a huge, like $20 million Broadway extravaganza with Sutton Foster and Brian D'Arcy James and Chris Sieber? Like, what do you remember most about that experience?
I feel like the answer is kind of in the question. It was such a big, big show, big experience. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And neither did anyone else in my life, because I don't come from a theatrical family. I don't come from any actors or any type of, you know, show business, anything. So it was really like, what is this? And like, what am I getting into? And also, and I was so excited, but also I was supposed to be doing a Random Farms show at the time. And when I got Shrek, I asked if they could wait a couple weeks, because I had to perform as Sandy in Grease at Random Farms. Yes, I was like, I don't get it. Like, I have to
I'm
still do
Sandy
that.
Sandy in Grease, I have to do that.
I have to do it. So I got over that. I was convinced that's not the move. And I started, and also Shrek had just gone to Seattle. Everyone knew each other. There were really only, I think, three new cast members from who were not in Seattle. So it kind of, the rehearsal process for me was kind of like a rehearsal process I had like when I was doing Billy Elliot, which was quick, and I was kind of going into something that was already developed, rather than some of the original cast that I've been part of, that it was like ground up. Like, it wasn't really that kind of ground up thing. So it was really, yeah, I was getting into something that was so large, and I felt so small, and I was excited, and I was just learning every day as I went along and learning.
Do you remember that first performance, that first time you were on?
I kind of don't. Like, I wish I did. I wish I could be like, and that was the moment. I mean, I remember being surprised that you could see people's faces in the audience. That was kind of surprising. And I also hadn't had that much rehearsal going into it, because they had done it in Seattle, because there were so many bigger.
And you were sharing a part with someone who, so she was doing it, or you were doing it, depending on what was happening.
Totally. So I was sharing the part. We both did four shows a week. And the girl that I was sharing the part with had done it in Seattle. So the way that I learned the part, rather than them like taking rehearsal time for that kind of thing, because there were just bigger things to work on than I know it's today. So I was like sitting and watching for those couple weeks of rehearsal. And then I learned the music the last day that we were in the studio. I think I had like a rehearsal with the assistant director, and we learned the music. And then throughout tech, I also watched a lot. And this is, I can say this now because we're adults, and like, I've known her since then, but the girl that I was sharing the part with, Leah, asked like if I was her understudy, because I was, you know, I was a lot of watching, and I had, I think, one or two rehearsals. And then I was in previews. So everything was so, so quick. And I was really coming from a place of observing, and kind of no one knew what to expect from like this little 8-year-old child. And I kind of, it just kind of like clicked, and it kind of worked, and the adrenaline kicked in, and everything.
What kind of adjustment was it for your family that all of a sudden you were doing 8 shows a week, and the youngest member of the, you know, family was out working essentially every night?
It was definitely an adjustment. It was an adjustment from us just all doing our extracurricular activities all the time. My sister and I both did theater together at Random Farms. And I think once I started doing it professionally, she kind of shifted to other extracurriculars. And it, you know, it definitely...
I'm sure that gets tricky.
Well, totally. I mean, yeah. And I think there were a lot of family dinners missed. And my mom had to be in the city waiting for me for those couple hours when I was doing the show. And she would take so many trips back and forth sometimes just to make sure that she could like tuck my sister and brother into bed, or that she could, you know, have family dinner and still be that full mom while also being there for me and making sure that I'm safe in this like complete adult environment. And that was crazy too, that it was like, it was just a complete learning experience of what is it like to be a child working in an adult world. And it was a kid's show, but, and there were other kids in it and they were great. And we played games and we did our homework, but it, I was in an adult space. And so that was all completely new.
So when you left Shrek, did you go directly to Billy Elliot or did you have a minute in between?
No, I went directly to Billy Elliot.
Like you just like packed up your things and moved down the couple blocks.
No, literally, that's what I did. So I think around the time was when we were renewing our contracts potentially. That was like, that also happened at Mary Poppins too, that it was like when that question came up was also when I got my next show. It was like the weirdest thing. So around that time was when our contracts were up and we're going to be renewed. And then I auditioned for Billy Elliot. I wasn't a competition dancer or a dancer that a lot of the Billy Elliot kids are/were. I was like a really strong tap dancer and that was just kind of like natural to me. And I think that's what got me the job, but also, so I was a strong tap dancer and I was a good dancer, but I wasn't you wouldn't necessarily expect me to be in Billy Elliot. But I had this audition for a different part at the beginning of July, I think, or no, I think it was the end of June. We had just like sat there at the Tonys while Billy Elliot won every single award. We were right across the aisle from them. And
Shrek. Is that the same year as Shrek?
Yeah, there's the same year.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we won best costumes and Billy Elliot won everything else. And so then a couple weeks later I had this audition and then Nora Brennan, the casting director afterwards, asked me to stay behind while everyone was leaving the waiting room. And she, you know, said something like, we really liked you and something, and we can't cast you right now. You're not right for this part, but I have a feeling, you know, we're going to see you again. And then 2 weeks later, I didn't have another audition. 2 weeks later, I got a call that I got this other part. That was one of the other Valley Girls. And that was completely new and shocking. And I had these, I think it was probably 2 weeks of rehearsal in the studio. And it was all day, every day. And then I was going to Shrek at night. And
that's a lot.
No, totally. And I was still going to school. Cool. Oh, no, at that time I wasn't.
School, Billy Elliot, Shrek, you know, normal.
Right. So that was the summertime. So I guess I didn't have school at that time. But it was also kind of funny because I was like a little chubby when I did Shrek. Mm-hmm. Like I was like a little butterball. And then so many people were like, oh my gosh, you've lost so much weight. And I was like, I did not realize that I was chubby before, but thank you.
All you ate was soup, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, every single show.
And you were constantly running around doing a Broadway show. So right. If you're going to lose any baby fat, that's the diet. I'm going to start.
That's how I do it. Right. No, but so I was dancing so much doing Billy Elliot. So I like just went, I think people were like, who is this? And so then I went into that show and I was a replacement and coming into a very like formed family. And I kind of had to figure out how to work my way into that family. And the girls in the dressing room were all so nice and welcoming and warm. But it also, I still had to kind of figure my way out getting in there. And then once school started again, then it was like, okay, how do I do my homework in the dressing room of like 15 girls.
So much more fun to do a show like Billy Elliot with 25 kids in it over Shrek with just these three sad sounds.
No, I mean, I think all of them were different experiences. I've been thinking about this recently. Even I play Sudoku sometimes as my quarantine activity, and I learned how to play Sudoku like when I was in Shrek, or I learned how to play Boggle, which I am still very good at Boggle, and like those kind of things that made that experience really special being backstage. And Billy Elliot was just different. It was like they had already been there for I think a year when I got there, and there were all these activities like Halloween, and we would, you know, haunted house, and there was just so many activities for the kids, and there were also so many wranglers. It was just a big kind of machine because there were so many children in that show.
How long did you stay in that show?
That show I stayed in for I think 10 months, and then I got Mary Poppins. So I left.
I remember you booking Mary Poppins. I was like, is this girl kidding? Like, it was just those three back to back. That was like nut. Like, no one was doing that then.
Right. No, it definitely.
Okay, so you joined Mary Poppins, which is another huge Broadway family show with what? There was always three sets of kids. So six at all times.
Mm-hmm.
What was Mary Poppins like?
That show was magical. That was just Disney just so knows how to work with kids. And also the kids were such a big part of the show. And the show had been running for, I think, 4 years at that point. So they really had a system going of making sure everyone was nice to each other, making sure that, you know, everyone was disciplined, but also that we had fun. It was just, and then the show itself was magical, literally. It was so wonderful. And also, the six kids all started together at that point. Everyone had just left. So it was really like we were a new bunch coming in together. And I don't think I realize, I don't know if I've said this enough, but like, I just at these times did not realize how big these things were, or even the fact that I was going from show to show to show. People would say to me that that was a big deal and that that was unusual, especially for a child. But I guess that's unusual, but it wasn't something that I was like, oh my gosh, I am.
Look at me.
I am in Mary Poppins now. And it was such a big part too. Like, we were on stage the entire time, and it was kind of like Shrek. I learned how to sing on a Broadway stage. Billy Elliot, I learned how to dance on a Broadway stage. And then Mary Poppins, I put them all together.
In Mary Poppins, they did you have different sets of guys, boys that you would go on with, or did you always have a team?
We would have monthly, we would switch off who our partner was, mm-hmm. like who our brother
Michael.
Or sister was.
That's his name.
Who, Michael. Michael. Yeah. So I started with one of the boys, David, and then the next month was someone else, then the next month was someone else, and they had a whole system going where I think a couple of the weeks you would do three shows, and one of the weeks you would do two shows, and then you would be on standby or you would be at home. And so it was a really good system they had going there.
Now, the vomit episode happened at that time or when you left and came back?
No, that was the first time around.
All right, so let's tell the people the story because it is so good.
Yeah, it's really one of the strongest memories of my life. So
I'm like sweating waiting for you to tell me. Go ahead.
So I was leaving the show, and I had one show left, or this was my second to last show. Every night before the show, I ate a fish taco from Schnippers. That was my pre-show meal. So I was feeling a little queasy. Like, I think I had been feeling a little queasy that whole entire day. Didn't want to acknowledge it and just kind of went about doing the show. And in Mary Poppins, the house is, it's that the back of the house goes upstage and then the nursery comes down and then the roof goes up. So,
climb up to get into the nursery to fly down, right?
Yeah. So we would fly down for every scene that we would have in the nursery, basically. And so we were about to go down. It was the beginning of the show. I think we were maybe a couple numbers in, just sang Perfect Nanny, went upstairs and sat in the nursery waiting to fly down. And then this was such a short window, and I said, I don't feel well, and I vomited on the floor and on the bottom of my dress, and then a stage manager who was always sitting in the closet came out, wiped up my throw up, and then we flew down in the nursery. I did the whole number, and then I did the whole number after that. So I went off stage, my dresser, or the kid's dresser, Maya, she wiped my dress, and oh, it's disgusting. And then I went on to do Jolly Holiday, and I was like, I do not think I can do another one. So I called out at the show, and my grandpa was seeing the show that Aww. Night. And then all of a sudden, Sadie Sealer was on. He was like, that is
that
not
was her Broadway debut.
Yeah.
That you threw up all over the place, and then Sadie Sealer made her Broadway debut.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
That is such a great story.
Who was Mary then? Was Ashley Mary Poppins?
No, it was Laura Michelle Kelly.
She would not have been having you thrown up on her near her.
Oh, Ashley. Yeah, I mean, Laura Michelle was so just kind and warm. And we had another time where the house or the nursery stopped in midair right before we started our scene. And I was supposed to be walking off the nursery to start the scene. And so we stopped, and obviously I knew that we were however many feet in the air and was not going to walk off, but Laura sat down on the bed next to me and held my hand, and she's just such a warm person. It really made that experience so.
It's an insane thing to ask of a kid to do, like, all of that, when you really, like, helicopter it for a minute, and you're like, yeah. Costumes, do these songs, it's midnight, and do it again tomorrow, and anything can and will go wrong at any time, and you need to go with it in front of 1800 people and a show like where there were so many moving parts. And I don't know if I've seen a Broadway show since then that had that much stuff going on.
No, and the kids are such a big part of it, and we were dancing, and we had costumes, and we had costume changes, and we had, you know, all those magical moments, and it required so much adrenaline. And by the end of the night, we were tired, and then there was school the next morning.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So you left, let's keep going down the road. You left Mary Poppins because you were about to originate a leading role in a brand new musical happening on Broadway / Roundabout Theater Company called People in the Picture.
Picture.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
You didn't say it right at the beginning.
I used to say picture. If you're listening at home, I would say picture because I'm from Long Island. Picture like a water picture. And Rachel has been correcting me her whole life. Okay. So People in the Picture and starring Donna Murphy, and you were playing Donna Murphy's granddaughter.
Yes.
In this big brand new Broadway musical. Talk to me about how that came to you and tell me a little bit about that experience.
Okay, so I auditioned for People in the Picture when it was called Laughing Matters, which was the original title when they were doing the readings. They had done, by the time we opened on Broadway, I think they had done maybe 13 years of readings and workshops and redevelopments. And so I auditioned, I think in 2009, while I was doing Billy Elliot. And everyone was auditioning for it. They had multiple rounds of auditions. So I would get through callbacks and then they would start from scratch and I would get through callbacks and they start from, I think they just really wanted to find their girl and be sure that they were right. And since then, I think, the writers told me, like, we knew that it was you or whatever she said. But I think it was one of those really exciting moments where I had this lengthy audition process, and then I did the reading of it and got to work with Donna and all these amazing Broadway veteran actors who I was just learning so much from every day. And then I did another workshop of it, I think. And then they had said that they were bringing the people in the picture potentially to Broadway around that time, when I was, my contract was going to be renewed for Mary Poppins. So just like Shrek, it was one of those things where, like, so I had done the show. Shrek I had done for longer. I'd done for 9 months, but Mary Poppins I had done for 6 months, and we were going to renew again. And then around that time they were like, oh, this is happening. And then I was like, oh, okay. So I left Mary Poppins and I gave my notice that I wasn't going to be renewing. And then I think a couple months later I started rehearsals for People in the Picture. And that was a really, like, ground up experience, changes all the time, songs going in, songs going out. Even while we were in previews, it was like, there was a song that we were working on for a while, and then halfway through previews, it became a different song. So that,
you're like 11 at this point?
I was 10 turning 11. So that's right. That's yes. So that was really more on the job training of learning how to get line notes the day of and then put that into the show that same night, and bonding with the cast in that kind of way and feeling like I was really creating this part.
Well, I was. It's your role. Like, you created
yeah.
it. You're on the cast recording. You're yeah. in the, you know, you're the original cast principal. Creating a role is the coolest thing ever. And to get to do that at your age is huge.
Yeah. And I think sometimes I forget that, you know, I originated the role in Shrek because I was so young and didn't process what that meant, that Leah and I were both originating that part. So when I see people do it in high schools and in all over now, I'm like, it's hard for me to process that I was, you know, one of the first two girls doing that part. And so when People in the Picture, yeah, it was this feeling of, I kind of lived and breathed that show, and it was a very emotional show. It was very heavy, and I learned how to kind of do that 8 shows a week. So that was also the first time I was doing Billy Elliot, I did 8 shows a week. So scratch that. Mm-hmm. But Billy Elliot was, I was in the ensemble and I understudied Debbie, and this was a larger part, and I was doing it every night. So yeah.
So that show, like, wasn't received in the way that I think a lot of people had hoped. I mean, it mm-hmm. had some really beautiful music and a gorgeous set design and an incredible performance by you and Donna Murphy, and so many other people, but it didn't become like a huge moment. Was there a lot of disappointment in that? Could you feel that?
I loved the show so much, and I thought it was such a beautiful show that I kind of was unfazed by the reviews or the perception, or I just felt like it was a beautiful family, and the story felt so important, and it felt so important to me. And I was playing this third generation Holocaust survivor, and I am a third generation Holocaust survivor. It was not only like a monumental moment in my young career, but also in my life. And so you felt that energy in the theater. I think after reviews came out and kind of it was not being perceived necessarily as people would expect, you felt that kind of heaviness. And I think as a kid, that was interesting and strange to see, because I wasn't thinking like, oh, my, you know, paying rent or getting the next job. And it was a limited run, so I guess that wasn't really a factor necessarily, but it can weigh on a cast. And I wrote this letter called Dear Ben Brantley. And
oh my God, this is all coming back to me. Keep going.
Yeah. And I wrote this whole, it was like 12 pages long. And I wrote just everything I loved about the show and the people. And it was mostly about the people. And I kind of went in depth about every person and why it was so special. And I don't know if anyone felt like that brought more levity, but it definitely made me feel better. And
but your experience has not changed because it wasn't embraced critically as this huge hit. It didn't win Tony Awards. It wasn't. But
right. I mean, it definitely could have been one of those moments that was maybe career altering in a certain way. It was a really big part and it was who knows? But so maybe if it had had like, we had performed on the Tonys and we had whatever, who knows what that would have looked like. But I didn't really look at it in that way. And that show is still feels so special and important to me. And I feel like I learned so much just by observing. I was working with, you know, Chip Zion and Lewis Stadlin and Donna Murphy and Joyce Van Patten and Nicole Parker, like every night I was just watching them. And that's kind of the kind of education that you can't really,
it's like truly the best training to work with great people.
Right. And yeah, so I'd say it was what it was. And in terms of the perception, but it didn't make that experience any less special for me.
Leaving that show, I'm sure once that show closed, it was pretty hard for you. Were you ever out? Did you miss a single show?
I don't think I missed a single show. I really like powered through that. And it was definitely hard. I don't remember my emotional life at that moment. I know that every time I left a show, I would cry, even if I didn't think that it was going to. That was shocking to me in my first couple shows because I didn't realize that that happened, like when everyone's singing Happy Trails to You. But this was the first time that I was like closing a show. So I closed the show and then I don't know. It was maybe summertime. I was going into sixth grade. I was going to middle school. And I'm sure it was a little bit kind of like, okay, back to reality. But then I had done this reading of The Big Meal at Playwrights, The Big Meal at Playwrights Horizons. And that was happening in the spring. So I kind of had that on my calendar. And then meanwhile, I got this call. I think it was probably a couple months after The People in the Picture closed, maybe 3 or 4 months tops, where they needed an emergency replacement for one of the Janes that they had had. And I still fit the dress because I had just left the show a year before. And I went back into Mary Poppins for a few more months from, I don't know when I started that. Maybe it was like November through April or maybe earlier than that because I had the Big Meal lined up.
Was it so fun to go back to do that again?
Yeah, I think I kind of forgot, you know, I didn't know what it would be like to get back into it. And I forgot that rush that you feel of being on that set and the magic of it. So it definitely, it was weird kind of to step back into it because I was like, oh right, this was my everyday. But also I loved that I got to go back and work with new kids, new people. I mean, a lot of the same people were still there, but I also felt kind of more ingrained in the Mary Poppins family because I knew more.
You did The Big Meal at Playwrights, which was a very cool play, originating a role again now in an off-Broadway play, which seemed like an impossible thing to learn because all these conversations, if I remember correctly, were happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Something bizarre like that.
That is exactly what it was.
And then we could talk about your career forever. We have to get to this big, exciting moment you have in high school. So you start ninth grade at LaGuardia, right? You went in ninth grade. And then was that the year you booked Fish in the Dark or you booked it 10th grade?
It was ninth grade.
You start a new high school. You're like, I'm here, high school. I'm going to learn how to be a regular student.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the dead years. And we know that most people don't work a ton between ninth and 12th grade. And yet you booked a Broadway show like almost immediately.
Yes.
And it was not just any Broadway show. You booked Larry David's Broadway play. And that is a huge, huge thing. So tell us the story.
I think that sentiment kind of stuck with me for the first few years of, you know, ages 12 to 14. People were like, oh, you're probably not going to work because that's what happens. You're a teenager. So I had mentally prepared myself for that. And I also felt fully equipped for that time because I stayed in regular school throughout my entire journey.
You were never homeschooled.
Right. So I was like, that's totally fine. And then I got these kind of lucky moments where I worked on plays from sixth grade through eighth grade. I did an off-Broadway play every year of middle school. So, which you can imagine how middle schoolers perceived that. But
cool.
Yeah, like they're like, oh, you're going to your off-Broadway play. That's great.
Theater. Go ahead.
So I'd been working on plays, and those each I could talk about those experiences forever. And then I started at LaGuardia, and LaGuardia is so big, and I think people don't realize how large the school is. Like physically, there are just so many students there, and I definitely felt overwhelmed and, you know, small again. Like,
no one will miss me if I hop out to do his play.
Right. Well, I also hadn't kind of established myself there yet. So I really, my audition for Fish in the Dark was maybe October or November of freshman year. I had started my drama classes and everything as a freshman at LaGuardia, and I really loved it. And then I had this audition process that was pretty short. It was just one audition for casting and then one audition with Larry David and Anna Shapiro and maybe one other person, and on tape for producers. And then I was doing this Broadway play, and I did not realize how much that would mean to me to be back on Broadway, to kind of break those odds or kind of prove people wrong that, you know, that feeling of working as a teenager. I think it is rare because they can just get adults to play teenagers, but it was this lucky moment that they needed a 14-year-old Jewish girl, and I was a 14-year-old Jewish girl. Perfect. And it was like the stars aligned, and I got this lucky moment where I could learn from these comedic geniuses every night while I was also transitioning into high school and learning what that was. And the workload was completely different. It wasn't like my elementary school and middle school days where I could, like, you know, memorize the textbook and then go do well on the test. It was like, oh, this is high school. I need to figure out a different way of learning this material. So it was interesting, but I feel like it was the perfect way to kind of transition into high school, because I had this family around me completely separate from school that made that weird time so lovely and welcoming, and it kind of felt like home. So
I was working with Larry.
It was amazing. I mean, he's just so, he really is himself. And he's what you see on the stage and on the screen. That's what he is in real life. But he's also so nice, which I don't think people would expect. He's a really nice person, and obviously always being really funny. And it was definitely so cool to work with him, but also everyone who kind of was like surrounding him too. Like the women that I shared the dressing room with are still, I'm so close with them, and they're kind of like my second moms. And it was just this really loving environment. And I was the only kid. So I didn't process it moments. I knew who Larry David was, of course, but did not know what all of it meant till a few years later, where I could look back and be like, wow, that was crazy.
And then Jason Alexander replaced him, right?
Yeah.
Were you a fan of Seinfeld?
I had seen some episodes.
It's not like a kid's show, but like,
no, I mean, I totally knew who he was, and it definitely was a different show when Jason came in. When Larry was there, it was like, it was Larry, and Larry was on stage and all of his fans were there and everyone just loved him. And when Jason came, it was more so like working with someone playing that part. Like he was, because he's, you know, he's like acting as this character that was written for Larry. And it was, both of them were so funny in their own ways. And Jason's just such a kind person. I think that is the biggest thing that has stuck with me throughout everything, is just every person that I got the opportunity to work with was so kind, and I think I was lucky in that way. It kind of showed me that that's the way to go always, is just being a kind and giving person. So he was amazing.
Fish in the Dark is wrapped and you have to go to high school. Mm-hmm. I know you do a bunch of film and TV things. And you obviously do your school show. You do Broadway workshop shows. How hard is it to go from this kid who's had huge Broadway experiences to just being with kids who have never experienced that and doing shows, whether you're starring in them or playing smaller parts? How hard is it to balance that?
I don't know. I mean, it was definitely different, but I had some time between my kind of stint of doing 4 Broadway shows in a row. I had, you know, like an off-Broadway play in the spring, but then the rest of the year I did maybe an episode of Orange is the New Black, but then was in school and was experiencing the kind of woes of middle school. That's like, middle school is terrible. And so similar with high school, like, I think through all of this, because I've always kind of been navigating my own world and going back and forth, I learned how to adapt and how to just function in that kind of universe. And sometimes I probably at first I was like, oh, wow, I, you know, have my evening free tonight. And oh, this is what it's like to like have time to do my homework. And it was totally different. But I think at the same time, like, I was still working and was still having those experiences. So I never fully, until senior year, where I really decided to do my school shows and have that final year at LaGuardia, I didn't really have ever a full moment of being like, okay, now I'm just a regular kid, not as much auditions, you know, like that.
I know that you had to, we won't get specific, but I know you had to turn down job offers so that you could do your senior year show. How hard was that of a decision to make?
Well, that is a very nuanced decision.
Complicated, we know.
I'll write about in my memoir, but that was really hard and confusing. And looking back, it's kind of the one big thing that I look back and I'm like, wow, that, I don't know if that was, it may have been a mistake and maybe it wasn't.
Probably not.
You know, it's just a play. And so many people have said that to me since then. And I've totally come to terms with it. I actually read that play in my playwriting class this year. And it felt like a very full circle moment. Yeah. It was very cathartic. But it was a tough decision to make. But at the same time, I did Little Night Music, which many people would be like, high schoolers doing Little Night Music, what is that about? But that was a real growth experience for me. And I felt like I grew so much as an artist in that time. And also personally, it was a really hard year. And I needed those kind of moments that it was harder to kind of come out the other side.
And be a senior in high school and have
experience.
Rachel, you're the best. Okay, we need to, I have so much to talk to you about, but we have to do Obsessed. I need to know what you're obsessed with and what's getting you through the quarantine or anything that is keeping you happy and joyous. And then we have to get into our Broadway Workshop quickfire questions.
Okay,
so
great.
You get to start with your obsession and then I'll tell you mine.
My obsession is the 5th season of Queer Eye. Okay. I know that's not, you don't like that show that much.
I love
that show. I think there have been a lot of times in quarantine where I've been watching very heavy things. I watched like Normal People, which was very good,
but also
very consuming and a little bit depressing. So after that, I kind of made a vow to myself to watch kind of mindless, uplifting things. And Queer Eye is exactly that. It's very uplifting.
Well, so I'm going to give you, this wasn't even my obsession, but I'm just going to give it to you. It's called Gay Face. It's a British comedy that's on Hulu. It's truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Game Face. The woman who is the star of it, its name is escaping me. She's brilliant. And it's perfectly British and amazing.
Great.
But my obsession this week is the Amelie recording, the UK cast recording of Amelie starring Audrey Brisman. It is so good. I saw it in the West End at the Other Palace. It is, they fixed that show. They figured out how to make it work. And if you are listening to this, give it a listen. It's on Spotify and iTunes. It is fabulous. So that's my obsession.
Wonderful.
Obsession. Okay.
Obsession.
Are you ready for the Broadway Workshop? Rachel Rashaf, you're about to have the Broadway Workshop Quickfire Questions, which is a series of questions put together by myself and Broadway Workshop students specifically for you, Rachel Rashaf. Okay. Favorite fast food?
French fries.
Favorite vacation location?
Anywhere in New England with like a beach.
Okay. Scariest thing about going to Harvard?
Being in New England.
Well, more on that later. First Broadway show you saw?
Hairspray.
Did you have braces?
Nope.
Wow, nice one.
I got 4 wisdom teeth out this year, so I felt like that kind of made up for it.
Did I had them all out too, and I had Invisalign. If you can go back and do one performance of anything you've ever been in, what would it be?
This isn't Quickfire anymore. Because maybe Big Meal or Mary Poppins, great. Or I don't know,
all of them,
or maybe 42nd Street too at LaGuardia.
So good. Oh. That was great.
Thank you.
I'm sure you could play that part again. Tap it out. what would your superhero power be?
Probably flying.
If you had a yacht, what would you call it?
I'd call it, this is my yacht. Sorry.
My yacht. Sorry. who wrote your college recommendation letter?
One of them was written by Larry David.
That's amazing. Okay. What store do you shop in most when you can shop in a store?
Probably CVS. I mean, love shop CVS. There now.
Would you like to play Katie in Mean Girls?
Yeah.
I'm just putting it out there. I just think you'd be so good. So thank I put you. It in the questions.
Put it in the atmosphere.
I'm sending it out. Not that I think Mean Girls is coming back after all, but... in the revival. How hard was it to get the blood off of you after playing Carrie at Broadway Workshop?
It was so hard. I don't even know if it came off.
It's there somewhere. Can you name one show on TLC?
I can name so many shows on TLC.
Well, name one.
I can name 90
Day Fiancé before 90 Day the 90
Fiancé.
Day.
Say Yes to the Dress. Say
you
yes
watch
to the
90
dress.
Day Fiancé?
My mom watches 90 Day Fiancé, and then I come and I watch it with her. And
start texting Karen about it.
It makes me really kind of sad a little bit.
So upsetting. What do you have on your bagel?
Vegan. Probably avocado.
Dry.
Wait, but I recently started having fish again. So now I'm having lox, which is like great. Yeah. Like that was the one thing I missed.
Fill in the blank. Having a Wrangler is like...
Having a Wrangler is like having the best friend you didn't ask for.
No, I see your face. Worst part of being a Mary Poppins?
Throwing up.
Okay. Pre-show ritual?
Vocal warm-up and hot water and...
That'll do. Strangest stage door interaction?
I don't really think I had that many strange ones. I probably did that I don't remember. But there were a couple people that maybe like knew my name that I was like, how do you know my name? That felt strange.
That feels weird. When an adult person knows a child's name, it's very
odd. Yeah.
Okay. Go-to album for a car trip?
Probably Joni Mitchell.
Blue.
Yeah.
It's everyone's favorite. Favorite Billy and Billy Elliot?
Oh my gosh. Oh. Probably maybe Trent.
Right.
Trent was so good at everything. They were all so good.
And you said Trent. Do you bake?
Do I bake?
Yeah.
I try sometimes. I feel like I kind of try to perfect recipes that are very easy.
I want blank movie to be a musical.
Adventureland.
Ooh, that's a good call.
Yeah.
What role should Patti LuPone play in the musical adaptation of your life?
Maybe like, she could play so many people. So in theater world, maybe she would play my Wranglers.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
That'd be great. In real life, maybe she'd play like my bestie at school, or who knows.
What is your favorite app on your phone?
Probably Spotify.
First audition song?
Heart from Damn Yankees.
Ooh, I do kind of remember that. Mm-hmm. One job you didn't get that you had a hard time getting over?
Probably there was a production of Fly at, I think they did it in like Texas or something, that I had a lot of auditions for. And I don't usually get emotional about auditions. Like I usually kind of brush it off, but that was one that kind of hurt my feelings, or I felt like, damn.
Well, I hate them. Right. If you can have dinner with one person, living or dead, who would it be?
Sarah Bareilles.
Favorite vegan treat?
Oh gosh. I just made these vegan cookies that are very good.
Right.
You just look up like vegan chocolate.
There's no comment.
Vegan chocolate chip cookies.
Okay. Weirdest experience as a child star?
Probably. Can it be more general?
Yeah.
I think it gives you like an interesting relationship with growing.
Okay.
I think that's, and I kind of avoided some of that because I was never that small. Like I wasn't like 3 feet tall when I was 13, but also it's when you're growing, you kind of feel like, oh, you're reaching the end, even if you're totally not.
Got it. Do you watch any shows on Bravo?
No, I used to watch, was it Millionaire Matchmaker?
Yeah.
I liked that show. Okay.
So you can you name two housewives?
Oh, totally. Nene Leakes.
Great.
Teresa.
Nice. Great. I'll take them both.
Yeah. I'm with it.
You just picked like the two most notorious housewives too. last book you read?
Great Gatsby.
God, you're so.
No, I'm like going through every book on my shelf now that I never fully read. So that was the one
That's good.
That I didn't actually read in school that I should have read.
Okay, name a musical you're okay with never seeing again.
I don't know. I don't wanna. Maybe Hairspray. I feel like
okay. You've done. You've had your time.
Yeah.
If you can go back in time and see any Broadway show from the history of Broadway, what would it be?
Probably Next to Normal. That's not that old, but I didn't see it.
Like Lincoln Center at the
I
library.
Know. Yeah, that's true.
So do that.
So older? I don't know.
Is there any?
Hello Dolly?
Yeah. Like, that would be cool.
I mean, I saw the recent Rival, obviously, but like back.
Do you watch The Politician? Bette Midler is unbelievable on it.
I haven't watched the second season yet.
Tonight. She's giving a performance that's only meant for a 5,000 seat theater. And
okay.
Fabulous. Okay. Couple more questions. Have you ever left a show at intermission?
Yeah, just one show.
Amazing Grace. I loved Amazing Grace at intermission. Okay. What movie can you watch over and over and over again?
Lady Bird.
Okay. One thing you want people to know about you?
I don't know. I really have no idea. I don't know what people already know about me. I guess that I'm very good at Boggle.
Right. It's good.
That's really good at it. Like no one can beat me.
Rachel, you have had the most exciting, interesting career, and you've always remained a kind, smart, funny young person. And you've never had even an inch of attitude. And that's like a testament to who you are and how you were raised. And it has been truly a joy of mine to have had you in my life for so many years and to watch you grow up. And I am so grateful and thankful that you are here to share your story with the people who listen to this and tell the people where they can find you.
Oh my gosh. You can find me on Instagram at Rachel Reshef. You can also, I guess, find me on Twitter, but I don't post on Twitter. So
don't find her there.
Don't find me there. Follow me on Instagram.
But follow her on Instagram. And Rachel, again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having
me. It's been you've turned my day around. And people who are listening at home, please make sure that you subscribe to the Little Me podcast. Make sure you follow our new Instagram at Little Me Podcast. Also follow me because I love a follow at Mark, MarkTumminelli. I'm gross. I'm 40 years old asking for followers. And also remember to follow Broadway Workshop and see what we have going on. There are amazing young people who are taking our classes and workshops and camps. And Rachel's been such a big part of Broadway Workshop's history. And we'll have to break that all down on a separate episode. But
Part two.
Rachel, thank you. Stay safe. Guys, get out there in the world. Be the change you want to see. Wash your hands. Wear a mask. Don't be an idiot. And, listen before you talk sometimes. I don't know if that helps.
I think that's good. That kind of sums it up.
I'm listening a little bit more than I ever have, and I feel good about that. So, Rachel, I love you. Everyone is listening. Thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Yay.
Thank you, listeners. This podcast is produced by Alan Seals, Dori Berenstein, and the Broadway Podcast Network, and edited by Derek Gunther. For more information on the Little Me podcast, go to bpn.fm/littleme. And follow me on Instagram at Mark Tumminelli or on Twitter at That Tumminelli. And for more information on workshops, classes, and everything Broadway Workshop, go to BroadwayWorkshop.com. Thank you for listening.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.